Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about unity and recognizing that united we stand and divided we fall. We all hang separate or we all hang together. It's what you have to really recognize about the topics of discussion that simply are being ignored by mainstream media. They're not telling you that there's a group of ruthless, sociopathic, scumbaggery filth out there that are trying to set up your government and take every asset that you've got and kill all the rest of you. They're not going to tell you that. Because, well, how would you respond to that information if you stumbled across it? There's an old saying that many men will occasionally stumble across the truth. Most men will pick themselves up and dust themselves off as if nothing ever happened. Some people, on the other hand, have a more creative aspect. And there's always this question amongst people when they wake up to the truth about, you know, scumbaggery and whatever. What do I do? And I've got news for you. It's not a rhetorical question. What can I do is a question you have to ask yourself. Can I write lyrics? Can I speak publicly? Can I man a video camera? Can I go in front of a microphone? Can I build space-saving houses that use way less materials and are cheap as chips to build and don't plug into the grid? Can I invent a water fuel engine? Can I set aside a couple of hours a day, instead of watching television shows, watch some documentaries and learn about all these things that are going on so that I can figure out how best I can combat them in my own special and unique way? Those kind of people are very dangerous to the enemy agenda because they're not collectivists. They don't think like a herd or act like a herd. They think for themselves and act to protect the herd of their own accord. This is the difference between a patriot and a flag-waving slave. Now, we have a musician on the line here, my name of Truth Seeker. How's it going, man?
Going good. How are you, man?
Somewhat fabulous is my standard response, but now that you're here, I'm just borderline and non-fabulous.
Awesome. That's good. Good to hear.
Yeah, you're a bit low there, man. Can you speak up?
It's good to hear. Can you hear me better?
Yeah, that's better.
A little bit closer. All right.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what your name is, what your band is, and et cetera.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm a rap artist. I go by the name of Truth Seeker, and basically had an awakening back in 1998. I was, you know, strung out on drugs and got real bad into witchcraft and things like that, and into a lot of the occult arts, and really got to a place I didn't want to be, man. I was communicating with spirits and hearing spirits trying to contact me, and really brought me to a place I didn't want to be. I called out to God and what I knew to be God, and you know, got with some people in church and called out to Jesus Christ, and that was back in 1998. And basically, you know, been walking with God ever since. You know, just spreading the message of righteousness and, you know, doing that more of a Christian rap. Within the last couple of years, I've been, you know, on like a conscious awakening and really into a lot of the stuff like 9/11 truths and, you know, pushing truth in, you know, every aspect I can find it, whether it's dealing with the political realm or dealing with, you know, the miseducation of the religious system and educational system, things like that. So that's just what I've been doing, and that's what my music's been about the last couple of years, and I'm about to drop my new album called Awaken the Fire. It's more of a spiritual album. It's not really targeted towards Christians or anything like that, but it's more of a universalist album. Just dealing with a lot of different esoteric truths and kind of putting them together on one album.
Yeah. Well,
in a nutshell.
I was wondering about this the other day. Does being a member of a religion mean that when you speak truth and what have you, regardless of what the religion thinks, they start to kind of look upon you as sort of like a threat to itself or try and excommunicate you or something?
That's the story of my life, especially with this album. But you got to understand, man, you know, the Bible even says, you know, that, you know, heaven is God's throne and the earth is his footstool. And, you know, God, and the Bible tells you that, you know, God doesn't dwell in temples made with hands. So if you understand that God dwells within every person on this earth, that you know, we're just able, you know, we're all part of that family, whether you're a religious person or not, whether you're a Hindu or a Muslim. I think if you, you know, abide by the universal law, man, which is love, I think you're part of the family, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always thought about this kind of new phenomenon called the hippo-Christian.
Is that what I am? I never heard of it.
Well, I kind of made it up, or I might have got it from somebody. I forget where, but it's not a well-known enough term yet, as it should be, I believe. Well,
yeah, you'll probably see a picture of my face next to it on Wikipedia or something.
The Truth Seeker Hippo-Christian.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a title of a next song, mate.
Yeah, it might be. But, No, I mean, I'm not really, you know, religious per se, because we understand, if you understand history and you understand the church in general, man, you'll see that it really does not line up with the Bible, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to read the Bible and then look at Christianity itself and say, hey, there's something different going on. So what I've, you know, like to say, I believe that, you know, Christianity in general or the Bible or whatnot, you know, started as a spiritual practice in the East. And now it's, you know, moved over to the West and it's become a religion, you know, and this is something that, you know, we learn by experience. This isn't something we were taught by our parents, you know. This is something that, you know, we had an experience with God, and it's not just me, it's a lot of people out there like me with the same feelings, you know.
It seems like a technique of command and control warfare, don't you think? A whole bunch of people have this sort of massive spiritual awakening, and so the government of the time, Rome or whatever, gets together all the different eclectic works of all these people and picks and chooses what it wants and puts it out there and then says, right, this is the religion for everybody, claiming to be based on the original term, but they miss out a lot of the important stuff, perhaps.
That's exactly what happened. That's what happened to the sayings of Christ. That's what happened to the followers of Christ after he died. They went through, and those who were truly, really following what he said, they actually tracked them down and killed them. And then they said, okay, what you guys are doing is not what we want to push, because you guys are rebels. You guys are telling people that they don't have to come to us to get God. You're saying they can go straight to God, you know? So that's basically what happened, you know?
So does that mean Christianity at its core, before it was, you know, sliced and diced and what have you, was about having no real master?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean, you know, not in the sense of just being a rebel as far as, you know what I'm saying, anarchy or anything like that, but just knowing, man, that, you know, you can access God yourself. And if you can access God in the privacy of your own home, then you don't have to go to the priest down the street, you know what I'm saying, to actually pay him to talk to God for you. And that's, I think that's where we're at, you know. And a lot of people are actually realizing that, a lot of young people. And that's where you see people like me. People like, you know, Stephen the Voice Cook, which is one of my homies, he's been on your show. He's pushing the same message. And I think a lot of people are waiting for a voice to actually raise up. And then, you know, because people are like, you know what I'm saying, when they see the real, they're going to recognize it. When they see somebody like me and say, hey, I can understand what this guy's saying. But a lot of people are just scared to be the forerunner to say something, because obviously, you know what I'm saying, the forerunner is the ones that actually put their neck out there. And, you know, we may get, you know what I'm saying, martyred in the process of it. And that's kind of what I see going on personally in my life.
You think you're going to wind up becoming a martyr?
I say that figuratively. I don't mean it literally like I'm going to die. I just say, like, your peers and stuff, those who, you know, are around you, those who actually say that they're there for you when, you know, push comes to shove and when everything hits the fan, you know, they kind of back up, say, hey, I don't know this guy, just like they did to Christ, you know what I'm saying? When Christ was going to be crucified, you know, even Peter, that was just like his right-hand man. Even Peter was like, hey, I don't know him. I don't know how, I wasn't with him, you know? And that's kind of what we see for anybody actually, you know what I'm saying, being like a forerunner to the truth. And when I say the truth, man, the truth comes in many aspects. I tend to deal more now on the spiritual aspects of it instead of more of a political, but, you know, I can go there too, you know?
Well, religion is political, isn't it?
Now, yeah, totally. Because, you know, I mean, that's why you see, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, that's your Christian vote, you know what I'm saying? And, like, you have a lot of Christians who vote Republican just because they're Christian, just because, you know, it's something like abortion. They're, you know what I'm saying? They'll stand on abortion and say that they're against it, which I am too. But you know what I'm saying? You're going to vote Republican, but you're actually for war, which is going over there killing other people's children. You know what I'm saying? So it's really, you know what I'm saying, a lose-lose situation when you look at it in those terms. And, you know, that's how it's marketed to the people, to the consciousness of the people. And
isn't it a decision basically formed of ignorance? If they knew better, would they vote better?
I don't know, man. I really don't know. Because, I mean, yeah, it is a decision that's based on ignorance. But even if they knew better, like, a lot of people don't want to know better. Like, they really don't care. Like, they'll just take that one thing. Oh, you know, abortion, and then they're sold or whatever. Okay, that's good. I'm with you. I don't like abortion either, but you know, you're for killing other people's children. You're for war and stuff. I mean, you got to look a little bit, you know what I'm saying, deeper into it before you actually make a educated opinion. You know,
you got to look how far that duct tape wraps around an object. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You ever done that? You know, you'd be building something or taking some boxes apart or whatever, and some idiot has duct tape the two boxes together. You go to lift it and you strain your back out. You know,
It's
pretty straightforward. You know, just a modicum of investigation can save you a world of hurt. I mean, that's basically all it is here. And quite frankly, when people don't know who they're voting for in their government, it can bring about a big, bad, nasty world of hurt indeed. You know, like there's our media in New Zealand, right? This is an interesting side note, has just begun to expose our Prime Minister, John Key, saying there's not going to be any job cuts in the public sector. And now he's cutting like 2,500, maybe even a few thousand more. There's going to be this massive merger of these four major government departments into this one uber mega surveillance control every aspect of your life department. You know, it's just quite that's horrible. And I've been saying this for years, since 2008, that this is what they're going to be doing. Okay. John Key's a private banker. He came in here from Merrill Lynch and Bank of America. He's still got shares in Bank of America. New Zealand's borrowing money from Bank of America as he's the prime sinister. So the more we go into debt, the more he personally profits. Okay? There is no doubt about it. This is what their plan is. And the mainstream media just now, about, what, 4.5 years later or something like that, is starting to catch on. Oh, John Key's not doing exactly what he said he was going to do. You think?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's what it always is, man. Anytime, you know, these senators and stuff who are elected, anytime, you know, that they have a hand in a corporation, you know, it seems to kind of, you know what I'm saying, skyrocket, you know, because that's what they're, you know, that's what they're pushing. I mean, they've all got their hands in something, man. So.
Well, how else would they be able to get blackmailed into doing terrible things to the country? Unless they do it on.
It's crazy, man.
Yep. And it's the same thing everywhere you look, isn't it? You know, I have lots of people who come on the show, bro, who say, well, I don't know how the situation down here there in New Zealand is, but our situation in America, we've got corrupt courts, we've got bad voters, we've got a dumbed-down population, people are too distracted by American Idol, blah, 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 blah. And I said, mate, it's the exact same thing everywhere you look, doesn't matter what country you're in now.
Yeah that's true. I believe it. They got a scripture. Hey, can I share the scripture, man?
Yeah.
Out of the Bible, it's Hosea 4:6, and I think this is really what we see. Hosea 4:6, it says, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge, because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no more priest to me. And it really says, like I said, Hosea 4:6, my people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. It's not because, like, there is no knowledge or it's not out there. It's not being broadcast via Vinnie Eastwood or Truth Seeker or whatever. But it says, because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee. And I really think that that's what we see going on, man, in both areas, like you said, the religious and the political, you know?
Yep. And of course, there's... every other industry you can basically throw into that mix as well. Banking system, of course, there's no more powerful entity today than the entity of banking. They own everything.
They're all connected. Mm-hmm. You know, the churches definitely, you know, are, you know, you know, sent back by the banks, and you have the prosperity movement, which, you know, tell you, you know what I'm saying, to get money, and that, you know what I'm saying, basically to where money becomes your God and things like that. So you see they're all connected, man. This is basically, you know, what the devil works through, man, it seems like, you know.
I found it interesting that the Vatican and the Pope came out and he said one of the next dead, you know how they released like another 10 deadly sins or something like that?
Yeah.
And any one of them was being super rich. Well, how rich is the Vatican?
Mm-hmm. Really, all of them, man. Yeah, every single one of them.
What are they talking about, man? They're telling everybody else that being super rich is really bad, and they are super rich, and they mosey around almost exclusively with the super rich. They don't even know what the heck's going on, and the whole Christian community just goes, oh, yeah, that's fair enough.
Because they want to be rich too, you know? Everybody wants to be rich, you know?
And why wouldn't you? You know, why wouldn't you want to actually have earned something and be able to live off it so that you don't have to bust your hump all the time just to pick out a meager existence? You know, you could actually live and enjoy some free time and maybe accomplish some interesting projects with your time off. You know, there's plenty you could do if you didn't have a job distracting you. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Truth Seeker, and we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And I think I might have to take you up on that offer, Mr. Truth Seeker. I love being interviewed because I'm a borderline sociopath and I love to talk about myself, you know. But today's about you. Okay. And what you stand for and what you really want to get accomplished in this life, you know. And you're just coming up, releasing a new album, right? And you told me over the break that your fan base is starting to get up a little bit. Now, how do you really kind of reconcile that? How do you think to yourself, have I done enough work to deserve this much recognition? Mm-hmm. Have you?
The work speaks for itself. I mean, I've been working hard from the get-go, but I've been evolving. You know, spiritually, lyrically, basically in every aspect. So I think now, you know, I've recently been working with a group called the Lost Children of Babylon, if anybody's actually familiar with them. And really, man, their fans have really embraced me and my new work and everything I'm doing. And I've got a pre-order special selling CDs and T-shirts. And, man, I've just been embraced, and I've sold more than I've ever sold on any album. And just that by itself is like, I wasn't even planning to sell as many as I sold, and it's not even over. And just that by itself, it got me blown away and in awe, you know what I'm saying? And it's not even out yet, and I still got a month to go before it's over. So that by itself, it's just like, you know, it's just, you know, it's so amazing to me. I'm so thankful, you know?
Now, I was just thinking about it. But you earned that, didn't you? Because you actually really did put in the hours, put in the work, put in the thinking time, the productions, and the design and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Do everything, dude. I'm like you, man. It's, you know what I'm saying? I'm almost like a workaholic, and the internet is just, you know, it just opened up to basically anybody in the whole world. A lot of people grind, you know what I'm saying, locally and push CDs in the streets. I haven't done much of that. You know, I mean, I've got my fans locally and everything, but the internet is just, you know, basically is open up to the whole world. And for, you know, just like, you know, being on SoundClick and MySpace when MySpace was popping, you know, just adding people and making connections throughout over the years, man. That's basically how I've built my platform and am I actually able to get my music out there to the masses, you know? So,
have you noticed every one of us, essentially, is at the pure reliance on other people for the majority of our lives? You know, we, like, for example, this radio show here wouldn't have anywhere near as many listeners if the people that listen to it don't go and tell other people to listen to it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same way with me. Same way. Because, like, the fans who are really feeling the music, like, you know what I'm saying? I gotta do everything. Like I said, I do all the video work, the production, the graphic art, the, you know what I'm saying, the music and the recording and the mix downs. I do everything. So it's just an honor, man, when the fans actually take those songs and take the product and they share it on Facebook or share it on YouTube or something like that, or burn a CD for somebody to listen to. And that's how it spreads virally, man, and it spreads like a wildfire, and I couldn't do it without the fans. So definitely peace out, man, to all the fans who are, you know, tuning in and everything. I love you guys so much, you know.
And also other artists are the thing that really spurs you on. Who are your inspirations?
I mean, you know, you were mentioning over the break, you know, Nirvana and things like that. Just like, you know what I'm saying, coming up, I was a huge Nirvana fan. I listen to a lot of different types of music. I mean, if the music sounds good, I listen to it. Anything from acoustic, soft, laid-back music to, you know, screamo music, you know. But here lately, the albums that's really impacted me, I would say The Equivideum by The Lost Children of Babylon. That album right there it moves me spiritually when I listen to it. There's an album by Nas and Damian Marley called The Distant Relatives. That whole album is just amazing, man. And that's just what I've been on here recently and been listening to some old Bone Thugs and Harmony and things like that here recently.
Have you noticed that when you make a really good song, it's usually just a compilation of all these different eclectic influences? Like, nobody just comes up with a good song and a good tune and a good beat, straight, you know, just off the top of their head or something. It's always laying back in their base to something like, man, the guys were having a jam the other night, and after we finished the song, he was like, man, it was a little bit like Bloodhound Gang in there. And I was like, really? and we watched the video back on the computer, and it was like, oh, yeah, why is everybody always picking on me? Because your only sculpture was the lunch lady.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it's like, you know, that's cool because we do all have those influences, and I've personally got my songs. I could say, oh, that sounds like him. That's my Bone influence. That's my LCOB influence or whatever. That's cool, and it, like, pays homage to them, but it's like you do it in a sense and you do it in a way that you're not trying to rip them off or you're not trying to copy. Like, that. This is me. This is who I am. Yeah, you're going to pick up on those influences, but I'm not trying to rip off LCOB. I'm not trying to rip off Bone Thugs. This is just what I am, you know? So, you know, they say imitation is the highest form of flattery, man, but, I mean, I've sensed it, you know, dropping music that's, you know, that nobody's really doing, putting it online, and then all these guys are trying to copy it, but it's not as good as the original, you know? So I want to be somewhat, you know what I'm saying, original in you know what I'm saying, what I'm doing, and not just be a knockoff of somebody else.
Yeah. So an original menu that's influenced from various other meals.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? Sounds good. Is it just a tad more spicy, is it?
You know, it's going to have all that and more, you know what I'm saying? So if you like them, then hopefully you're going to like this, you know? And it's basically what it boils down to.
Yeah. Music, I find, you can lead revolutions with it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it really, music is powerful. If you, even the science behind music, the tones that you use, the words that you're saying, I mean, you know, there's these different sayings, you know, there's a couple. I mean, you actually retain 30% of what you hear and 70% of what you say. So if you listen to my songs and these choruses get stuck in your head and you're repeating them, you're chanting them, you're going to remember it. And that's how songs get stuck in your head. That's why they're catchy. That's why they call them hooks, because it hooks you in, you know. And also, when we're trying to push an agenda or we have a, you know, a mission or a focus behind our music, there's another saying that says, repetition reduces resistance. And that's for good and bad, you know. like the more you hear something, the more you're eventually going to, you know what I'm saying, let down your barriers and let down your resistance till you accept it or believe it. And like I said, we see that done for the positive and negative in life, you know?
I remember when I was watching Rage Against the Machine at the Big Day Out in Auckland, like 20, 30,000 people in the stadium all with fists in the air, saying, you know, pardon the French, frick you, I won't do what you tell me.
Oh, yeah.
And all those people saying that exact same thing at the exact same time was very powerful, and it created an atmosphere of sorts. And Zach De La Rocha, lead singer, you know, they kind of stopped the song to a degree, and Tom Morello's just still strumming a few chords. And he says, how many of you people think this president should be assassinated? And 30,000 fists in the air. Yeah!
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. You know, you can whip people into a frenzy and virtually control them like a mob. You know, I've seen, conversely, bands tell people to stop shoving and to stop pushing and see entire crowds pacified.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can take people where you want them to go with music. That is why it's such a powerful medium, and that's why I think that the scumbaggery element, which we mentioned before, has seized control of the majority of the music industry to a point in which, and this is no joke, I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's a musician, when they signed you a record contract or something like that, they say, okay, I'll give you $50,000 a year to, you know, pump out your album, pump out your music, blah, 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 blah. I'll give you free concert tickets. And they say, spend as much as you want, spend as much as you want. What I didn't tell them is that they actually open up a bank account in your name. So if you don't recoup all that money and all that stuff that you're spending or whatever, it's all the better for the producer because he's got you in debt for goodness knows how long. It's the same with the banking industry. It's everything is about getting you in debt for as long as humanly possible.
Yeah. And that's what it is. I mean, you know, I've just been thinking, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Zachariah Sitchin. And
I just got an email by a listener this morning about him.
Yeah. So, you know, he believes with the translation of the tablets or whatever that, you know, we were seated here to be slaves and to mine gold for the Anunnaki. And I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that's true, but I can totally see how we're put here into this system to work, to go out and work a dead-end job, work a job that you don't like, clock in, spend 8 to 12 hours a day there in order to, you know, fund money for that business to keep going. You get a little money, you know, to spend, and you get to go home at night or whatever. And, you know, you're just kind of like seems like you're like a mouse on a wheel just going, just kind of actually like generating power for this big industry or this big entity, you know, to sit back. And you know, it's like you see the hardworking people working hard and putting in more actual labor and more work for those to sit up like the politicians and play their games, you know. Your audio dropped out, bro.
Hello.
Okay,
yeah, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
It dropped out again.
All right. Let's just
hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I got you.
Well, some technical difficulties there. Goodness knows what. Games we play, and all the world's a stage. I'll just repeat that for like a third time.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think it came across that time.
Yeah, all good.
Yeah.
Because it's scary, isn't it? How many masks we all wear. You know, you act differently around your family to you do around your friends, differently around your boss to the way you do around children, you know, differently to everything, you know. There's all types of these different behaviors that you're supposed to emit in certain social situations and what have you. And I think that this, I think it's political correctness maybe, not to put too fine a point on it, which has made people act in a very specific way now, in a way that's unnatural, to a point in which they're actually losing touch with reality as a whole. And that's what everybody is starting to get into the mood of, having no comprehension of reality. Absolutely none. That as soon as you give them something that shatters that notion that they have about whatever it is, they just start attacking you because they don't want to lose out. They don't want to be sitting there and going, this person thinks I'm wrong. You know, yeah. I have to be right. I've put so much effort into it. I've got into hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt to college for this. You know, how can I be wrong?
He who dies with the most toys wins, right? Or something like that. That's what they say.
Yeah. Or yeah. In the Vatican, it's he who gets toyed with the most wins.
No comment. No comment.
Maybe that's a little bit of a low blow, bro. Now,
it's the truth, man. Truth seeker. You know, it's the truth. Hey, you know. It's true, man. It's crazy, but it's true. And it's sad, but true. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Sad, in fact, hey, have you noticed that some people, they use the telling the truth as an excuse to be rude?
I used to do it. And the majority of Christians do it. Yeah. And, you know, because they're right, and, you know, they're the only ones that's right, and their interpretation is right. And, you know, if you have a different opinion or anything, you know, you're wrong. And yeah, I used to do it, man. I used to do it, and I've been humbled. And you know, I have a piece of the truth. I will say that I don't have it all figured out. I don't claim to, and nobody does. Your pastor doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Your priest doesn't. Your congressman doesn't. Your father doesn't. He doesn't have it all figured out. They may hold a piece. They may hold a piece to the puzzle. When you put it together, you can look at it and see a picture. And I have a piece. And if you want, you know, the piece I got, it's there. You know what I'm saying? I don't know it all. And nobody does. You don't know it all, Mr. Religious person out there, whoever you are. You don't know it all. God knows it all. And we're connected to that source. So, you know, we see in part and we know in part. You know, and that's in the Bible, so.
Yeah, it's like I always say, man, the guy who thinks he knows everything obviously knows nothing, and the guy who thinks he knows nothing probably knows enough.
Yeah. It's deep, man. And it's ugly. It's like I'm dealing with that because I'm really touching on a lot of different topics that are demonized by the church. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about meditation and yoga. And I had some people I was dealing with. They found out I did yoga with somebody. And, you know, he's one of the demonized me and said he couldn't work with me anymore. So we're talking about stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Because yoga is deadly. Especially with the release of noxious gas during contorted stretching positions. You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Truth Seeker with an A-H on the end is my guest. And we'll be right back after the break at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
People, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live all around the world on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, as well as AM, FM affiliates and delayed broadcasts, and also fellow radio networks in the UK and USA who simulcast. Thank you all for doing so. Truth Seeker, with an A-H, is my guest at the moment. And we've been talking about the music industry and sorts of things of that nature. And I don't know, for some reason recently I've been looking very much into the occult side of things and the scary flibbity gibbet demonology type scumbaggery, and found it remarkably fascinating at just how the mindset of the occult has infiltrated virtually everything. every bastion of officialdom, really, is now exhibiting the same sorts of teachings that one would receive as part of any satanic cult.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about a lot of the artists and stuff who are really showing a lot, trying to show symbolism and things like that?
Well, yes, and other things too.
Yeah, I think the artists, you know, there's a lot of stuff. Like, now, you know what, like, I was doing the political thing, you know, just a few years ago, like, and, you know, I was basically, you know, demonized for talking about it and spreading and things like that. But I think now, man, it's the popular thing. It's invaded pop culture. Like, they talk about the Illuminati. I heard the other day that you know, there are kids at school who actually, they have a joke. When something strange happens or something bad happens that they didn't do, they blame it. Oh, it was the Illuminati. You know, so it's like, it's this pop, this thing that's invaded pop culture. And I'm sorry, you know what, like, when something gets real popular like that, I leave, man. I just like, you can take it. You know, when everybody, you have all these experts in the Illuminati and all these experts in occult symbolism, and they have no idea what they're talking about, but everybody's an expert, you know? So when you get to that point, man, and there is more, disinfo out there from people just putting somebody cool with, like, somebody who's really good with, you know, After Effects or Sony Vegas, and who can make a video, you know, and put out some information. And they have no idea what they're talking about the occult and about the Illuminati or Masons or whatever, because they just watched another YouTube video and they claim to be experts after that. And that, you know, for me, one, I'm just pulling back from that aspect, you know what I'm saying? Because I did it, and it's becoming popular. And once it gets popular, dude, I go the other way. I really do. And some people think that's a good thing because it's the awareness or whatever. But it's so much disinfo and so much scare tactics and fear that it pushes at the same time. And it's nothing to play with. Like, you were talking about demonology. Like, I studied demonology. And to understand fear in the Bible says that fear is a spirit. And when you're pushing fear, you're dealing with spirits. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, that's you're dealing with spirits and you're pushing fear. And that's deep, man. And people really live in fear in these mindsets, in a spiritual mindset, scared that the Illuminati's coming to take them away in the middle of the night because they don't agree with Obama or something. You know, it's just an example. It goes, you know, it's endless. You know what I'm saying?
But now with the NDAA, they literally can. But this dovetails and kind of segues a little bit perfectly into the last question that I normally ask my guests. We all self-censor a little bit, so if there's anything you've kind of refused to talk about because it's a bit risque or might be seems a bit controversial or it doesn't come up in the conversation, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, here's the place to say it, if you've got anything. Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the most controversial thing I think I could say on your show, everybody listen, I could probably tell you that, you know, that God loves you and you know, he sent the son Jesus Christ to die for your sins. He doesn't hate you, and God wants a relationship with you. And I think that's the most controversial thing I could say on your show.
Oh, yeah, it is. And that's quite interesting as well, because when I first came on American Freedom Radio, that was something that was told to me, you know, you don't want to be preaching the Christian path too hard or something like that, because people switch off. And it's remarkably interesting because I think Christian persecution is coming back in a big, big way.
It is. And I think respectably so, man, because just like we go back to what we said at the beginning, if you read the Bible, if anybody's read the Bible and you look, you know, at it as a spiritual practice or whatever, and then look at the church now, you can totally see that it's totally different, you know. I believe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we're not supposed to wait around for somebody else to save us. You know, we are the ones who've got the power and the creativity and the energy and the thoughts to save ourselves. You know, the most important bit of survival equipment you'll ever find, you can't lose because it's inside your head. It's your brain. That's the bit of survival equipment that you really need. If you can think, you'll be okay. And that's something that Lindsay Williams told me, Truth Seeker, is that the elite, the Illuminati, as it were, are trying to, in this year, stage a whole lot of events that'll make everybody really afraid. The point of which you make people afraid is because it stops them from thinking.
Yeah. What are some of these events?
Well, let's talk about oil prices going really high, the collapse of the dollar, and a war with Iran. That's just three.
Throw into that
global economic catastrophe when all these derivatives bubbles blow up.
My comment is the fear thing is what I'm kind of getting back to is it could happen. I'm not saying it's not, but the thing about it is when we really look at conspiracy theories in the fact, if you got proof, that's one thing, you know what I'm saying? But you look at something like the Gulf oil spill, you know what I'm saying? Like everybody was freaking out, like thinking that there was going to be an explosion in the Gulf and
the tsunami
and the rain. And people were like calling me from like Facebook. I had my number on there for a while. And people were calling me like, yeah, man, it's going to go down. You need to leave the Gulf Coast. And people were actually moving. Like they heard this stuff on YouTube and actually moved and left. And you know what I'm saying? Nothing happened. And that's just one thing. Like there's guys who were given times and dates. We were supposed to already have the RFID chip, man. We were supposed to have been had that. But like, oh, they pushed it back because a lot of people found out about it, so they pushed it back, you know, and, the national ID cards and the stuff is like, you know, it's just fear, you know what I'm saying? And my message is that we're all spiritual beings, man, and, I want you to tap into, you know what I'm saying, your spiritual side. I want you to meditate, spend time in prayer, man, and develop yourself spiritually. When you get off the computer, when you get finished watching this interview, go outside, put your bare feet on the ground, put some seeds in the ground, man, spend time with your family, something like that, you know? That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah. It's when you're always worried about the things outside yourself, you forget about who's really in there, inside yourself, actually dealing with all of this stuff. And maybe if you worked on yourself a little bit, all the other things that are going on around wouldn't seem so bad.
Exactly. You have peace in the midst of the storm. That's the message of Christianity and God in general, to have peace when everything is going to hell around you, when the world's falling apart. We have this supernatural peace that the Bible says that the world didn't give you and they can't take it away. Bless you, baby.
Yeah, and there's another story I found was very interesting about POWs in Vietnam prisoner of war camps, you know, that kind of thing. And if the prisoner had a strong belief in God, they were far more likely to survive being held in the prison camp than those who had no belief of any kind.
Yeah, those statistics are overwhelming, man, when you really get into it. Like, people who actually attend church and worship in a place, they are like, the statistics are crazy as far as the heart attack rates and the blood pressure rates go down like crazy, you know, and the statistics are endless for those who believe in God. I'm not telling you what God to believe in. I'm not necessarily telling you to become a Christian because obviously, you know, I'm not, you know, pushing that. I'm pushing, you know, God consciousness, man, just to, you know what I'm saying, just to acknowledge him in everything that you do, man, and he will direct your path, you know?
That's yeah, my message. Yeah. In other words, keep your eyes open and your ears open and pay some attention, you know?
Keep your third eye open.
It doesn't even need to be of a spiritual aspect, I believe, in order for spiritual results to come out. You know, even just consciously without meditating and all of that kind of thing. Go around and talk with all different types of people about all different types of things and get to know them and forge relationships. And you find that you begin to absorb others' energy and it kind of draws itself into you. Not by interacting just with God, but kind of through other people.
When you're dealing with those people, you're dealing with God because God dwells within, you know, each and every person. And, you know, when you're sitting there having conversations with people, when you're watching television, man, God is speaking through everything and through everyone. And if you can't hear God, speaking through the television, or you can't hear him when you're reading a book, you're not going to hear him at a church. You're not going to hear them, you know, through your neighbor, and that's what it's about, you know. It's being God conscious at every given moment. You are
Indeed. I think this is a good spot to leave it. And his website, ladies and gentlemen, is truthseekermusic.com. That's truthseek, A-H, as in the truth seek, music.com. Yes, and facebook.com/truthseek. And thank you very much for coming on the show with me today, man. It was great.
Thanks for having me.
Mm-mm-mm. Time for some Jill and Joyce. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Coming up after the break, Lode Vermeulen, who allegedly was passed around a Dutch government sanctioned child trafficking operation. So this will be interesting.
Allegedly.
Everything's allegedly these days. And we'll be right back after the break. Allegedly.
The virus alert the masses.
Welcome back to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And you can join us in the chat room at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com if you'd like to. Now, my very special guest, not sure if I'll be able to pronounce this correctly, Lode Vermeulen?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
All right. Well, welcome to the show, and tell us a little bit about who you are and what it is you do.
Well, I'm from Holland, but I'm living in Ireland for the last 12 years. I am involved, a friend of mine, she is on the run. I met her here in Ireland. She is on the run.
You're breaking up just a little bit there. If you've got any web browsers or anything open, you want to close them down.
Yeah, I'll do it right now. Yeah, is it better?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Okay, perfect. I will close it all down.
Well, the person who referred you on, and I got you on pretty quickly as soon as she did, was I Am Not a Number, number one on YouTube, has been exposing a Dutch government-run child slavery program, to put it bluntly. And you were, in fact, involved and were a victim of this program, were you not?
Yeah, I was.
So tell us about it.
Well, I was just telling my personal story, what actually happened. Let's say 15 years ago, I had, and that was in Holland, and I had a very bad feeling. It was such a bad place, and I was right. But if you ask people, you know, in Holland, all of them, they're saying, it is bad. So that was one of the reasons. I was 12 years old. I was really scared. The reason why I had to go there, the reason why there's a different story. But but it was like a jail.
So did they take you off your parents and then just put you in these kind of prison-like facilities?
Yeah, the way how it works is the guardian. So if the parents are in trouble. It can be for any reason. It doesn't matter what. A guardian will look after the parents. The guardian will make a report. And the way how it works in Holland, it is impossible to appeal. So if he makes a decision or tells something about you, it is impossible to appeal. If a child get arrested by the police, and the child is like under 18, the police will send the child to the children court judge. And again, it is impossible to appeal, and that's one of the main issues. So the problem was I was taken away from my parents, and they moved me somewhere out. It was like 60 miles away where I lived. And the thing was, I couldn't see my parents anymore. And they said nothing, you know, about that. But that's the thing. It doesn't matter if your parents are good or bad or whatever. Every child has the right to see the parents. And that's one of the main issues. So what's actually happening, if a child has to go to a child house in the Netherlands, it's like a jail. And so you have to follow a program. And they do everything to keep the child away from the parents. It sounds now, ridiculous. Yeah.
Oh no, it seems very similar to what's been happening in the rest of the world as well. And so you were just inside this facility. They didn't take you out anywhere or do anything. You were just locked down.
Yeah, you know, I was 20 years ago, I was on a big congress in France, and I was telling about the rights of the child. It was a big meeting. All the children from Europe had to tell the way, you know, the rights of the child, let's say in Portugal, in Spain, Holland, and Germany. But finally, it didn't work out. It was a big show, but it didn't work out. But the way how it works in Holland is, a lot of people think that Holland is a country with high standards, you know, but the thing is, it also has a dark side. The only thing what I can say with my experiences, and I'm 37 at the moment, it took me around 10 years to recover myself, you know. When I left that house, that institute, I was completely lost. Most of them, and we all know that, they start to drink or using drugs or getting any other addiction. But I said to myself, if I start to do that, you know, I will end up and I will die. And I don't want that. So to fight back, it took me around, let's say, 10 years. And that was one of the reasons why I made the decision to go to Ireland. And Ireland was like 12 years ago. It was a great country. It's still a great country. But I was like far away from everything. And now I can start over again. I can do what I want. And I can build on my future. And, you know, that's my trauma. The thing is, if I go to Holland, it sounds crazy. You know, it's like, that's the thing, you know, it's my country, I'm Dutch, but if I go there, it's like, it's
like returning to the scene of a crime.
Yeah. And the other thing, what I've seen in all those years, because I've been there for 7 years, is a lot of abusement. So the team leaders, they were, you know, sexual harassing the child, you know, so it was so unsafe to stay there. The thing is, if the child judge tells the parent, okay, you can the child can't live anymore at home, they move the child to a child house. But the thing is, there is no fix. They don't fix the problem. They destroy the child. And that's the thing. First thing what they do is, it's very hard to... So the first thing what they do is, the children are not allowed to see the parents for a while. In my case, it took a half year. And then, it was every time they were asking me things, and they were in one way they were treating me as an adult. So it was always like it felt that I was on a police station, And in another way, they were treating me as someone who's not intelligent, you know? So it is, if I think about that, they were brainwashing me all the time. And so when I was 19, that was the day when I could leave that place, I was completely, it was so scary because I wasn't even prepared on the real world. Everything, I was living in a big city, but I was so, you know, because I was not used to things. If I was allowed to go to school, but after school I had to go straight home. So for everything I had to ask for permission.
Sounds very similar to the Shawshank Redemption being institutionalized and wanting to ask permission for everything.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was like, you know, when I was like 15, 16, 17 years old, you know, I was a teenager, I wasn't even allowed to go to the disco, to go to a pub, or, you know, so all those years are gone. So my life started, my real life started when I was 26, so after when I... left that place, I started to study, but at that moment, you know, they were always keep telling me, you're not intelligent, not intelligent enough, we are the decision makers, things like that all the time. No one of you know, the thing is, the first thing what they do is to take your confidence. That's the first thing. They don't like to see people, kids who are confident. So when I was starting to study, I was always scared, you know. It took years to recover myself. So after my study, I was like, I have to go. I have to go to a different place and do it my way. And that's the thing. I have two younger brothers, and I was living with them. But their life is destroyed. They are they don't want to live in the real world. So the only thing what they do is they live with their mother now for the last 20 years. You know, they difficulties to interact with people. That's the thing. They took everything from me. And you know, when I left that place, I said to myself, I want to be a person like others, you know. So I was working on that all the time. So I'm a likable person, but I had no confidence at all. And that was the learning process was starting when I was 26, and now I'm 37, and I'm doing very well. I have a career. I've studied. I'm not saying that I'm... I'm an Einstein or professor, but I'm intelligent. But they were always telling that I'm not, that I wasn't at all. Obviously, so they were doing everything to pull me down. So, and I always asked them the question, what do you want? That I will end up as a drug dealer or end up as an alcoholic? They didn't care at all. The worst thing is, that they are just like, they're not supporting you at all. They're getting paid by the government, but they're not supporting the child at all. I've seen from my last group, I was living in a group of 14 kids in that time, and I spoke to a girl, and we lived in the same period, and I was talking to her after, let's say, 20 years, and she was thinking about to organize a meeting, you know, reunion. I said to them, yeah, but you know, but the thing is, but at the same time, she was like, I feel, she was telling me, I feel myself so sad for the most of the people. They don't have a life, they don't have a future. And that's the thing, they're not coaching. And I was always fighting back. I was always looking for a way out. And finally, it did work out, but it was really tough. A lot of people don't even believe me that it was like, you know, they can get your money, you know. They can rip your clothes off. They can get your stuff. But the worst thing what they do, and that's what how it feels, they take your soul. They try to break your soul. It is like all those psychological games. If you do something wrong, they keep reminding you about that. You did that, even if it's a small thing. And that, it's a big battle. And that's the thing. So when I was going to school, after, let's say, eight hours a day, I had never a feeling I'm going home. So same, it was like a second battle. It was like a jail. It was exactly like a jail. So I can't. So I had to ask everything for permission. It's like if you are at school, you want to go to the bathroom, you have to ask the teacher for permission. And it was exactly the same in that child house. You have to ask that.
Well, the thing you sort of talked on there about breaking your soul, breaking your confidence, that kind of thing, it seems just like a farmer would do so to break the will of an unruly horse or something like that, so he can begin to use the horse to plow or to ride or to do anything with.
Well, that's what I don't understand is they lock you up, but they're not trying to get the best out of the child. They do the opposite. And the thing is, and if I give you, I tell you a scenario, what happened actually. I was one of the team workers. He was an psycho, so he was always sexual harassing the boys and the girls. So like, I don't like to use bad language, but you know, touching your bump or you know, grabbing your, you know what I mean. It was like, and everybody was like, well, it's the way how it is. So we had to deal with that. And even if it was like, it was impossible to make a complaint about that. And that's the system. So what happened, actually, there was a serious incident. I was fighting back because I was like, you know, I was fighting back. And one day it happened on an afternoon, he was grabbing my my throat, you know. And I was like, okay, you know, it's fun, you know, that's, you know,
I'm sorry, Lode, we're coming up to a break now, so we'll come back from the break and continue on the story from his hands were around your throat. I think that's a good cliffhanger. Okay. Yeah. Back in a minute, ladies and gentlemen.
La donna è occhi affido a chi le confida, mal cauto il cuore, ormai non sente sì, felice appieno, chi in su quel seno non gli va amore.
Ladies and gentlemen,
welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show
on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, broadcasting live. My very special guest is Lode Vermeulen. We were talking about how when you're in a jail, okay, the first thing they do to you, and in any prison movie will show you this phenomenon, they dehumanize you. You know, they make you forget that you're a living, thinking, breathing human being with your own hopes, dreams, aspirations, make you forget that there's justice. You're a prisoner, okay? You have nothing. You have no rights. You are a slave, okay? And in so doing, instilling that mindset, you make sure, by proxy, that many more of the prisoners do not suddenly get the urge to fight back. So they're much easier to control.
Oh, no, it is. Yeah, that's the thing. But sometimes, if I tell people my story, they're just saying, you are a hero. And I have, there's something in my blood. Because I always said to myself, I have to fight back. I have to fight back. And that's, you know, I don't know where it's coming from. But it's a bit of my attitude. I don't like if something is not right. So I always said to myself, is I have to wait before the doors will open and I will get back into the society and work on my plan. And okay, it took years because I'm 37 now, but for my feeling, even my friends are saying that, Lode, you look 27. And I like that because, you know, I feel myself very young. And I think that's one of the reasons is I have, you know, we call it in Dutch, it's like a late flower. So I had a delay in everything. And yeah, that was, yeah, it was good to go away, to go to Ireland, starting a new career.
But what career do you have? What do you do?
Yeah,
doing?
I started, I started, may I say the company name?
Sure.
Yeah, I started as a technical support engineer for Apple Computers. And I was doing the Benelux, the Dutch market, the Belgian market, and I ended up with doing the UK market and the Irish market. And my challenge was, I like to learn English, you know, and improve it and be the best, you know. So I was creating my opportunities. And after 5 years, I was, you know, I was a bit, yeah, fed up is the wrong word, but I was looking for another career. So I ended up with, I'm saying the name again, of a, it's a different company, IBM. I started to work as a sales, as an account manager, sales representative. But the interesting thing is I was working for the company for 6 years. I have an history of employment for 12 years. The way, you know, you've got good managers and bad managers. And I see a lot of similarities. And in all those years when I was working, you know, companies had to get rid of people, the recession, but what they start to do is they start to brainwash you. So I was, I was called a top salesman, but at the same time, my manager was saying, "Oh, you're useless! You're useless! You're useless!" And that was going on for a year, and it was reminding me about the child house. I was, and that was even, it was very painful because I was remembering that the team leaders in the child house, they were keep saying, "No, no, no, you are useless, 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 useless. Oh, you want to go to college? Oh, don't think about it. You're not good enough for that. You know that. We are the one who are qualified and we will tell you what to do." That was the usual story. All the time. And I was always like, hey, I'm not agreeing with that because I have my rights as well. So it was...
And I have an experience that teaches me how important my rights are because I know what it feels like to have them taken off me.
Yeah.
See, but this is the thing. Once bad things happen to you, you notice them whenever they're about to happen again. Before they happen. That's part of the important thing about talking to people about these sorts of things so that it doesn't happen to them. It's once you recognize the way things really are, once you recognize the way companies operate, governments, child protection programs, things of that nature, if they come through your door, you know exactly how to deal with them. And you don't have any illusions that they're out to actually help you or save anybody.
That's the thing. So, and I like to mention this my story because I've been living in Ireland now for the last 12 years, and I met a woman. She is from Holland, and she is on the run for youth care. And her story is, I just met her by a bit coincidence on the internet. So I try to support her because the reason why I'm supporting her is I have my experience. But at the moment, and it's ridiculous because even her solicitor is saying that her solicitor is based in the Netherlands, but she is in Ireland. The mother is not allowed to see her own child. And she didn't see her child now for the last 4 years. And the worst thing is, believe me or not, and I've seen the reports, they were telling about her that she is she had an she's mentally disabled, like a retard. So, and I said to her, because she has now another baby, and the child is doing very well, and it's crazy. The baby is 2 years old, and I see her now, let's say, once a week. Everybody loved that child, and she's living in Ireland now with that child. But the other one is kidnapped by the youth care in the Netherlands, and that child is now living by two parents, two people, by a couple with an age of 70 years.
Are they very, very wealthy people?
No, not at all. Just average. The way how it works is if you you can sign up to become a foster parent.
And do they do background checks on you to make sure that you don't have any criminal or sexual history?
They don't. It's even like if you like to become a youth worker, they don't check if you have the right qualifications. They don't check if you have a background. At the moment, there is a big case going on in the Netherlands. There was a guy who worked in a kinder crash, a child crash, and he abused more than 60 children.
It's a perfect cover because you can abuse many, many children because you've got them at your disposal. And because you tell all the children you're useless, and you can, and you're the one that they send the complaints to anyway, which you can just throw in the rubbish. Keep telling the children they're useless, and eventually they stop complaining. And then all of a sudden you can get away with 60 or 70 or 100 sexual assaults.
But, you know, but and the other thing is the way how it works in the Netherlands, if you, in some countries, if you kill, for example, three people, you're getting three times lifetime, let's say 120 years. In the Netherlands, if you kill three people, you're only getting the maximum time, let's say 20 years. So the thing is, there is if you in the youth care sector at the moment, the politicians are discussing that at the moment, and I've seen that on the telly, on the Dutch telly. The thing is, if a youth worker or a guardian makes a decision, you don't have the right to appeal. So if he's a child abuser, you've got a big problem as a parent.
And a child abuser with authority over whether or not you can complain about him, sue him, prosecute him, anything.
Yeah, but that's just the problem. So I like to tell you the story what happened when the team leader was grabbing my throat. And I thought it was a bit like, you know, a bit of an, how do you call that, a boy fight, you know?
Yeah, play fight.
Play fight, yeah. And but it was like, so I was knocking on the wall. I said, I couldn't even talk. I was like, hey, come on. I'm killing. I can't breathe anymore. I don't get any air. And he was just killing me. And I was knocking. I was touching his shoulder, knocking on the wall and say, you know. But he didn't stop. And I think it was going on for a few minutes. That was my feeling. But then he didn't stop, you know. He was getting ballistic. And there was no reason at all, you know. I didn't insult him. But he was just grabbing me and, you know, trying to kill me or get me to the ground. So I started to protect myself, to defend myself. And I was just punching on his head. Because I was like, I need to get out of this position. I was only 16 years old, and he was in that time 32. And he went down to the ground, and what I can remember, he started to cry, but I was running away. I was running out of the house, and I was walking on the street, and I didn't know what to do. I was thinking to go to my parents. But at the same time, I was thinking to go to the police. But at the same time, because it was self-defense. But I was so scared to go to the police because I was like, they don't believe me at all. And that's just the thing. That the children, they don't have the confidence, like, I have my rights. And if a team leader, a youth worker, starts to abuse me, I have the right to make complaint about that. But this is just a thing. They are scared. They are so scared. So what happened? Finally, what happened after? I think it was the same. It was the same day. I came home at 11 o'clock. And I was so scared. I was like, oh my God, you know. And he had to go to the hospital. And I was explaining what happened to the others.
Oh, well, we'll have to leave it right there until just after the break. Sorry, mate.
Okay.
Give us a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll get straight back into it. VinnieEastwoodShow.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
Me. Yeah. Yeah.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Yeah.
Keeping it bangster.
Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations, everybody. You made it. You're not insane yet. Trying to listen to a little bit of rough stuff on occasion can actually be good because it gives you sort of the shock and the jolt that you need to wake up from terrible, terrible nightmares. And some of these nightmares really happen to people. In fact, it happens quite often, more often than you'd ever want to know. It's more common than you'd ever want to admit and darker than you could ever handle hearing about. That's the kind of child kidnapping, global, pedophile, satanic cult type system that we're dealing with here. Yeah, pretty much. I've had people on that, like, from all over the different spectrums of occult demonology and people who have written books about and released mainstream articles about kidnapping and child pedophile rings exposed in the US and things that are operating to the same capacity in the UK. And I've had activists down here in New Zealand say, we've got the same thing. You're five times more likely to be sexually abused by CPS in CPS custody than without. So, you know, it comes down to, are you willing to deal with that? Because it's one hell of a rough road. Now, more to the point, if it happens to you, how do you get over it? And some people actually get over it by talking and telling to as many people as they can in a lot of ways. You know, if they want to know, you're more than willing to talk about it. And you get to learn a lot from these people because you learn the truth from firsthand. It's not some researcher reading a story and then writing a summation for you. It's from the horse's mouth, from somebody who was there who did that, like a Holocaust survivor. Yeah, I think that's about right, don't you think?
Definitely. It's be alive or be dead. That's it.
Now, the
last
questions that we normally ask for the guests on this show here, is there anything that you may have self-censored to a little extent, or maybe don't want to approach the subject a little bit because it's a bit risque or controversial? And if you do have anything, here's the place to say it.
Well, the thing is, I don't feel myself ashamed what happened to me. And I like to share everything. It's like I'm an open book. The only thing what I want to say is to the parents. You know, if that happened to your child for some reason, you can be a good mother, you can be a bad mother, it can happen to a good mother as well. The thing is, if that happens to your child, I would say, get a gun and shoot them and get on a run. Because I've seen what happened, I've seen it. And there's no worse thing what can happen. You know, it was just like, I still can't believe what I've been through. It's science fiction. It's the Twilight Zone. They can do what they want. And that's the thing. And, you know, I'm not I'm very spiritual. I'm not want to say, you know, I'm not against any religion, but maybe there's a God who's helping me or an angel. I always said, I have to fight back. I have to fight back. And I will never give up. Never. And that's the same story with my friend, the mother, who's on the run for the authorities in the Netherlands. She's going through hell. She has a lot of support from people, but she is so, so extremely scared because she has a new child. But it's so, it's almost the reports, what they're writing about. You know, the thing is, they're making up a report and they're making up with lies, and you have to believe them. And I always say to my friend, don't believe them, because they try to brainwash you. You know, I'm proud that I've made it. You know, I have a life, you know, and I've done, you know, I'm proud. I'm not a criminal. I'm making my own money and I'm paying tax, you know. But the thing is, like, there's so many victims at the moment, so many thousands of them, maybe millions. And it has to stop, you know, that's the thing. And if I, you know, the thing is, what I want to say is, like, all these victims has to bundle with each other and stand together and fight back.
I think that's kind of what Occupy was about. Noticed, and I think this is an allegation I heard one time on radio, that if you go and you talk to a lot of homeless people or whatever like that, and you ask them, you know, what's your story, and a lot of the time they'll say, you know, I was taken from my parents, and they hit me, and they touched me, and that kind of thing, and that they destroyed me, you know, it's like they sucked the soul out of my life, and now I'm just, you know, I'm wanting some money for some alcohol so I can you know, have a relief from this pain that I'm feeling, you know. And in the Occupy protests, a lot of homeless people were actually coming in there, you know. It was at times where it was sort of like it seemed almost 50-50 to me.
Yeah. Well, they are around, especially around Europe. They are even here in Ireland, where I live in Dublin. But I always said to myself, alcohol or drugs is not the answer, because it will give you only more pain. So you have to find a different way, because the thing is, you can do two things. You can go up or you can down. And I always said, I want to go up. That's the only way to go up. Because otherwise, you know, it will get, you will end up very bad if you start to drink, because you need to, you will end up as an alcoholic, and finally you will get sick, and finally you will dead, and that's finally what they want. But I always said to myself, I will never become a smoker or an alcohol drink. I drink only a few pints, you know, in the weekend, but I'm not a strong drinker at all. I always said I have to protect myself, and I have to use the strength of my mind, and it's like a mission, it's like a combat. You are at your own, and it's hard to find support, and it's yourself against them. So it's like one big jungle, and you have to create the way out, and that's my experience, how it works.
So you really do have to encourage self-reliance, you know, and just kind of think about this. Nobody's going to help me, okay? And don't think of it like, oh, nobody's going to help me. Think of it like, nobody's going to help me. I have to get myself out of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And believing that you can get out of it.
Well, you have to, you know, what I was always saying to myself, I keep fighting till the end. So I was, what I was doing when I was, when the doors were open, I was new into the society. I had no confidence, and I was like, you know, I had no education. I was just like nobody. And I said to myself, and I was 19. And I said to myself, I like to be someone. And it took a long time. It took like 7 years, and I said to myself, okay, now I'm going to Ireland, a new country, and in that time the island was booming, and I said, okay, I will work on that, and finally it was working out. But the thing is, in life, and it doesn't matter with with which, if you have to deal with an institute or government or whatever, the thing is, abusement is everywhere. The thing is, you have to tell yourself, you know, your manager of your job can abuse you. The thing is, you have to fight back. And my manager was harassing me for some reason. And I said to my manager, listen, I have the highest target of the team. I was working as an account manager.
We really have to wrap this up. We're about to finish the show.
Yeah, so and the thing is, you have to stand for yourself and you have to keep telling yourself, fight back and open up your mouth and don't be scared, because you have the freedom to speak. And if you find people who are standing behind you, you are stronger.
Yeah, indeed. And thank you very much for coming on and telling us your story. And you can check... thanks very much, because it's very rare an occasion to see somebody who did go through such abuse really truly believe in themselves enough to get over it and make something of themselves. You know, you can't change the past, but you can change your future if you believe in yourself.
You know, if I may ask, I'd like to say one more thing. I know you have to wrap up. What I'm doing at the moment is a lot of entertainment. And I make that, you can make a good thing out of that thing. So I'm just making a lot of jokes.
Well, if you can check him out, ladies and gentlemen, Lode Vermeulen, will have links up on the archive sections. Catch you later, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Lode, and we'll see you again sometime.